C6, number 25B.
Racism and science. And yet, they are the very opposite. How do we explain that one? We explain that one only through the different logic in it. So, let's take first the mystical logic, mysticism, but only the one value in mysticism. I just want to make a little note and tell you that later on I will come back to mysticism, but as a different logic in mysticism than the one value logic. So I'm not going to answer everything about the logic in mysticism right now, but just this one question: how do we explain that both have a one-valued logic, one value, and yet they are different? In mysticism, we have a monistic conceptual logic. In mysticism, we have a monistic conceptual logic, because they only accept one concept, namely the oneness. It is the union mystica, the mystical union of being one with the infinite. But that is a concept of oneness. So all the concepts the mystics use, they bring it down to one concept, the concept of oneness. Now this is very easy. Mysticism, mystical logic is very easy. You just have always to say, well, all is one. Anyway, after all is one. That's the logic of the ignorant, the logic of the one that does not want to think. It's the logic of idiocy. Whereas the logic of science also has a one-value logic. But it is not a monistic conceptual logic, but it's a monistic value logic. And I think in this we must see the great difference, that it is a monistic value logic, where we understand what are values and what are non-values. And we have seen that, therefore, in the classical logic, you make the difference between values and so-called values, which are non-values, which are just concepts. Therefore, in science, we are called, so to say, to resolve the opposite into nothingness. Therefore, what is the big difference? The mystical one monistic logic as a conceptual logic does not differentiate between values and non-values. It just takes any value and conceptualizes that value and calls it one. Whereas science does the very opposite. Science differentiates. Science, the inner nature of science is that you start differentiating, always more and more, until you come to more and more rarefication of thought, classification of thought, individualization of thought, and therefore science forces us to make decisions. Mystics are not asking us to make decisions. You see, a decision is to decide between opposites, isn't it? Whereas the mystic does not need to make a decision. He can take anything and just put it into the one concept, a concept of the infinite. And when you read all the literature that has come out of the students of Bicknell Young and so on, you read them all over the place. You read, lack is no lack, death is no death. And that goes on over pages and pages until you get sick of it. It's just lack is no lack. All right, that's conceptual one conceptual logic. You take a value that, the value that is called lack, but the mystical, the concept is that you can't have lack in the unity of being, therefore you call lack no lack, and then you have resolved the whole problem. Isn't that easy? It's very easy. It does, therefore, it does not ask to make decisions. It does not ask to make decisions between right and wrong. Because wrong is not wrong. Whereas science asks you to make very clear distinctions. So, mysticism really is always seeing the unity of opposites. The unity of opposites. They call it really, the mystics like Cusanus, they invented that term, that Latin term, perhaps which you may have to know, that coincidentia, oppositorum, it's Latin. You can read it without having had Latin at school. What does it mean? It is the coincidentia, the coincidence. The coincidence, sorry, that's better, the coincidence of opposites, you see, that is mystics, the one conceptual logic of the mystics. They take any concept that is contradictory, that is opposite, and make them to be coinciding, and say, they coincide. The opposite coincides. Naturally, they can only do that with concepts, not with values. Whereas science says, I explain, really, dualism away. Instead of making dualistic concepts one, science says, I explain dualistic concepts away. And you have seen how we could do that. Now we spent a lot of time to show how you have two concepts, then you have a third value, understanding, that will say this concept is a value and the opposite concept is no value. And therefore you have only the understanding of value. And then you resolve dualistic conceptual thinking into monistic understanding. And you have a one-valued logic. So can you see outwardly taking terms, mysticism and science more or less say the same? But the inner logic in it is completely different. It's absolutely the opposite. But if I have sounded now as if I would run down the logic of mysticism, I am going afterwards to resurrect that again and to see that those people, those thinkers, were seeing something very big. The only thing was that they couldn't quite explain it. But that what they were seeing was actually right. But they couldn't explain it right. That's the pity of it. And that today we could explain the mystical logic aright, then it becomes naturally scientific logic. But what they have seen, I want to show you, then later on, is really terrific. And is in a way much higher than the classical Greek logic. But that's going too far at the present moment. All right. And now we come to a next point, namely 14, we come to dimensional logic. Dimensional logic. It's actually what this professor in the newspaper is calling quantum logic, in a way. Yeah. Now, here we come really to the core of Mrs. Eddy's logic, really to the core. And it is here that we have to see how to resolve certain very pronounced, apparently pronounced contradictions in her textbook. So I go out to show that contradictory statements can be true, which means actually that this coincidentia oppositorum is actually not so wrong as it looks like. Because Mrs. Eddy uses in her textbook contradictory statements and hopes that we don't accept them as contradictory. Let me first just quote one example from the textbook. There she says, mind, capital M, mind produces all action. Very short statement. And I guess we would agree, mind produces all action. We wouldn't agree by saying, well, mind produces some of the actions, but something else also can produce action. She says, no, mind produces all action. And then if you turn a few pages, you see the very opposite, where she says, mortal mind produces all the actions of the mortal body. Don't you see that that must sound contradictory? Either mind produces all action, and then it's divine mind that produces all action, then you shouldn't say that mortal mind produces also the action of the mortal body. Can you see how mad a real thinker must be at Mrs. Eddy when he reads the textbook? And we can't blame him, because he may not have lived in our age, and even perhaps in our age very few people are realizing the new logic. Now, how can we explain that? I mean, we can't just say, well, we must have a clear-cut answer, a clear-cut definition. Now, look here. And he says, mind, capital M, produces all action. On which level is he thinking? He's thinking on that one valued level, where she takes not in any dualistic sense, neither concepts nor any so-called etc., etc., etc. It's on the level of absolute Christian science. And on that level of absolute Christian science, mind produces all action. Okay. On what level does she state that mortal mind produces all the actions of the mortal body? It's on the level of Christian science. Now, can you see? I'll come back to my syllogism. The major proposition and the minor proposition must be on the same level. or they are not stated accurately. If you take these two statements and put them into a syllogism, as the logician who reads it would do, and has done, that's why I criticize these statements. Therefore, can you see what you would do? You would put in the general premise, in the major proposition, mind produces all action, and then as a minor, that which is specific, you would state mortal mind produces all the action of the mortal body. Can you see? And if you put that and think you have stated the premise right, which is not so, but think according to classical logic, you could do that. According to classical logic, you could do that, because they didn't have any level consciousness. Therefore, they draw the conclusion. See? They must have drawn the conclusion, therefore, that mind, capital M, produces the mortal body. You see? That's as simple as that. And that's how people can reason in Christian Science. If they don't know the levels. And if they don't know a further thing, that every level has its own logic. We have seen that before. We have seen that on the level of Christian Science you have the logic of the two conceptions, that on the level of absolute Christian Science you have the third value, the logic of that one value understanding. Didn't we have that? So we had already introduced that each level has its own logic. Therefore, it is absolutely forbidden to make a syllogism and mix up two levels in the premise and draw a conclusion. That has not been seen until recently. You see? All right. So, can we see what it means to state the premises right? We can only put two statements of the same level in the premise as a major minor proposition, and only then we can reason right. Here you had a very good example with divine mind, or mind produces all action. Therefore, we could come to the conclusion, see, that contradictory statements, like the ones I have been quoting, can be true in one case and can be wrong in another case. Again, is that the old classical logic, where something can be true and can be wrong? That would conflict with the three laws of classical logic. And yet, you couldn't say that those two statements of Mrs. Eddy are wrong. They are both right. They are both right. But they are only right if they are seen in their category as levels. The moment you mix them up, they are wrong. The moment you mix them up, they are wrong. Did you see that in the syllogism? That they must be absolutely wrong. Therefore, we have to modify, really, the classical logic. And have to say, yes, those three laws at least must be considered in one level and not mixed up with various levels. Then, on the level of Christian Science, it is true, mortal mind produces all the actions of the mortal body. If we consider it from the point of view of absolute Christian Science, it's not true. It's not true anymore. Can you see That something therefore can be true and wrong, it only depends from which standpoint or level you look at it. Now, this naturally has brought up a lot of consequences, just as I said, that you have books that are written, say, on the following syllogism, saying really, without really stating the syllogism, but when one reduces the whole content of the book, stating actually, all is spirit, as a major proposition, all is spirit, as a major proposition, matter is, because matter is, you can knock your head against the wall and you feel that it is matter. Matter is, conclusion, spirit is matter. That's as simple as that. So they write a whole book about that matter, that the material universe is spirit, and that what you look at is spirit, and so on. Can you see where the mistake is? That all is spirit is really from the Christian Science level. Matter is right down somewhere way low on the materialistic level, right below the chart. Matter is from the conceptual standpoint, whereas the other, all is spirit, is from the value standpoint, and they mix up those two and come to a conclusion which says matter is spirit. So, in this way they wanted to prove what Mrs. Eddy wanted to say to Adam Dickey. And she pointed to the arm and said, this is spirit. So this is the way they explained that whole thing. Isn't it for... doesn't that drive you up the wall? This is really driving us up the wall. So, actually, you see, if we would state that syllogism right, we would have to say all is spirit, and then when we want to take in matter, we would have to say matter is the opposite of spirit. See? Then we would arrive at what conclusion? Matter is not. That would then be the right syllogism. So, you see, what is the answer really is that we have to be aware of a dimensional logic. That in dimensional logic, with dimensional I mean level logic, in the dimensional logic we have to take into consideration there is a law of translatability, which the classical logic did not know. And I come back to what I said yesterday, that in every science they are looking out for that general law of translatability and don't find it. Therefore it is not surprising that they use a logic which had no translatability, which had no dimensional logic in it. But you know, this logic have to be taken into consideration when we read Mrs. Eddy's book. For instance, look here at what Mrs. Eddy says. Just an example out of her book. She said, Jesus called the body flesh and bone. He called it. He didn't say it is. He called it conceptual logic. And he called the body flesh and bone. Why did he do that? And she explains why he did it. To accommodate himself to immature ideas. So when translated right down to the lowest level of conceptual logic to immature ideas, he said, I call body flesh and bone. And then she goes on, though he knew, he doesn't say, he knew, understand, he knew that the substance of himself was spirit. That's on the level, on the other dimension of absolute statement, where he knew from the standpoint of understanding of the one value their body was spirit. But he called, can you hear, conception? In the conceptual logic he said, it is flesh and bone, you know. Though he knew another logic. Can you see that in this dimensional logic, you can say the very opposite if you realize that you speak on different levels. Can you see that the mystic with this coincidentia oppositorum, that the opposites fall together, is actually what Mrs. Eddy says here too. That he says, this opposite, flesh and bone on one side and spirit on the other side, refers both to his body. The opposites fall together, they coincide. But naturally they coincide when we understand that those two statements do not refer to the same level of consciousness. That they are translated from one logic into another logic. Now, Mrs. Eddy doesn't always say after every comma, now I go to this logic and then after another full stop, I now go to this logic. She expects that we know something about it and get used to it. Yeah. Now you can understand that quote which I have brought earlier in the introduction where Mrs. Eddy says, in Isaiah we read what? I make peace and I create evil. I am the Lord that does all these things. The one is opposite, a coincidentia of opposites. Opposites coincide. I make peace and I also create evil. But the prophet referred to divine law, as stirring up what? Belief. Can you see? She comes from reality, from values to belief. Stirring up the belief in evil to its utmost when bringing it to the surface and reducing it to its common denominator, nothingness. You see how she explains this coincidence of opposites. She explains it and says, you know, the one is from the standpoint of understanding and the other is the impact when that understanding translates itself to, not to values, to concepts, to beliefs. Then it looks like creating evil, but it is actually creating good because it stirs up evil to bring it down to nothing. So in that one statement, again, we have that wonderful sense of the two dimensions of logic combined together and therefore give us a reason now for the mystical logic. Yeah. Okay, that's that.